This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. From primary through secondary and on to higher education, our country's educational system is increasingly challenged by doing more with less. Later in this hour, we'll hear from University of Wisconsin officials making their case for more funding as we head forward into a new state funding cycle. But we begin with our local school districts and their challenges, including the challenge of being faced with three choices as they prepare budgets for the 2010-2011 school year. They can raise property taxes, make large spending cuts, or a combination of tax increases and spending cuts. Public school funding has always been a complicated mixture of state, local, and federal funding, and the poor economy and subsequent decline of income tax revenue make the future funding of many schools uncertain at best. Producer Mary Meehan Stroob talked with La Crosse School Superintendent Jerry Kember and La Crescent HOKA Superintendent Ron Wilkie about their respective districts. And while both districts do face unique challenges in their respective states of Minnesota and Wisconsin, Jerry Kember began by affirming what's alike.
We have a lot of similarities in that as we look across the country, the economy's hurting. Communities are hurting. State budgets aren't what they should be. And so, you know, there's some huge challenges out there for us. So we're looking at huge challenges in the years ahead, unfortunately. But just like the rest of the community and the rest of the country, we all have to share some of the pain, I guess, and try to get through this and find a good way to get through this in a way to maintain the resources and services to our kids.
And it really, to echo Jerry's comments, the same situation in Minnesota, dealing with significant financial challenges with the recession. Projected deficits in the state of Minnesota looking out over the next 3 years are projected to be in the range of $5 billion. And to think that that's not going to affect all of us in the public sector, that's not realistic. And again, we need to come together to find ways to address these concerns.
So there's this thing called funding formula.
Yeah.
So what has that meant for your school systems?
Well, you know, I think most people who are knowledgeable about the funding formula, which is, by the way, a very complex, and I'm not sure about Minnesota's, but it's probably pretty complex. They're all pretty complex systems. There are a lot of funding streams, if you will, that enter into the picture and a lot of things to think about. But not to get into that. The state of Wisconsin has done some surveys, and I believe the last survey said 69% of the people in the state of Wisconsin believe the school funding formula is broken and needs to be fixed. So hopefully we're going to see some movement on that.
And again, very similar in Minnesota. About 85% of our budget in the La Crescent and HOKA school district is supported through state aid. It comes directly from the state. And that funding system has been under the microscope for a number of years now in exploring options to come up with more equitable approaches to funding schools throughout the state.
As you look at the current economic circumstances within the state of Wisconsin and across the country, and more particularly locally, and the financial needs in terms of your school districts, what are the greatest needs in that area?
We have a real gap between the revenues available to us and what our expenses are. Our expenses are growing at about 4% a year, and yet in the last few years, our revenues only increased by about 2%. Actually, for next year, our revenue only increases by 1%. So if you really looked at your own family budget and tried to interpret it that way, imagine if each year your family expenses were growing by 4%, but your income was only growing by 1 or 2%. You've got at least a 2% gap, which puts you on a credit card pretty quick, and school districts don't have credit cards for that purpose, fortunately. That's a good thing for everybody. But the same token, we have no way to fill the void. And so there's some real challenges for us in the years to come to maintain the kind of programs and services that our families have become accustomed to and really value. So that is a huge challenge for us, but we're working hard to meet that. I know you've had a number of public meetings as well in La Crescent, Ron, and I'm sure you're trying to fill the gap in the same way. One of the ways we've done it is through this community has been very supportive, and we've passed some operational referendums that have helped. But I think people are wondering, well, gee, Jerry, we passed that referendum. Why is there a problem? The problem is those referendums were passed with some assumptions that state funding would continue. Of course, that referendum was 2 years ago, and we all know that that landscape has dramatically changed.
Again, very similar in Minnesota, although I would say the funding, the increases we have. We haven't had them. The last increase in school funding was in 2005, and most of that was focused to cover the additional costs associated with special education. Again, we've looked at all of our options to increase and generate additional revenue. The operating levy, again, we have that in our school district, voter approved. We're very fortunate and feel very grateful that we have that. But again, that's a voter-approved levy, and we'll be looking to go out to renew or possibly increase that levy moving forward. When we were planning for that levy 5 years ago, we didn't anticipate not having increases in that state funding. So again, that disparity between what it costs and inflation and the revenue that we have, that gap is increasing each year.
Now, I would expect that in both of the school districts, you know, you've kind of pulled in the strings, you know, or tightened the strings in mm-hmm. terms of what you're spending. And I know in the La Crosse School District, you've had to face layoffs of I would say the core of the institution, and that is mm-hmm. the teachers that help or the instructors that help to educate the students. Have you had to face the same thing in Minnesota?
Absolutely. Throughout school districts in the state of Minnesota, this has been taking place, and ours is no different. Over the last 2 years, we've gone through some significant reductions in our budget, reducing operational costs, exploring every opportunity to create greater efficiencies, looking at every aspect of running a school district. We've unfortunately reached that point that we've moved beyond the operational efficiencies. The reductions that we're into now are in the area of staff that deliver instruction for students. About 85% of our budget is focused on personnel, is spent on personnel, and that means teachers in the classroom, support staff that supports instruction. We've also looked for every possible opportunity to generate additional revenue. Some examples of which would be a partnership that we've entered into with Winona State University that's bringing in additional resources, partnering with staff at Winona State. Our teachers are beginning to work with Winona State students and their staff. Winona State staff are in our schools, as well as bringing in future teachers into our district to provide additional support. We need to constantly explore those types of partnerships and opportunities to bring in additional resources and support.
That's one way we are able to fill a gap, if you will, is not through new money,
mm-hmm.
but both of these districts, the School District of La Crosse and La Crescent Schools, are interested in being progressive and being innovative, expanding programs. I mean, that's what we're about. It's hard to do those things, but with the kind of resources we have available to us in the community and with the local colleges and such, we've really been able to provide some opportunities that we simply couldn't have in these kinds of times. So partnerships is probably a key strategy in trying to fill the gap, if you will, and it's been a huge resource. UW-La Crosse, WTC, Viterbo, our healthcare, both Gunderson Lutheran and Franciscan Scamp, a lot of employers. The list goes on and on the way, and even some of the government agencies. You know, we're working on an environmental school out of Summit Elementary. We're working with the DNR and the USGS. So even our government friends are working with us because everyone would like to see quality schools and everybody wants to see good educational programming for young people. So on the positive side of all this, perhaps it's pulled the community together in many mm-hmm. ways that wouldn't have happened. And so we're excited about the partnerships and we really value those. And that's one way we've been able to really lean forward and do some really good things for kids.
Are there other changes that you feel would help the school out financially?
I'm not sure what proposals are out in Minnesota, but our state superintendent, Tony Evers, has really put together, conceptually he's laid out some things that he feels would improve the state funding formula. And I have to say, we've looked at this with our school board and with our administrators. We agree that these are good points. Now, how he's going to accomplish them still remains. We don't have the details of that. But if I could just point up, he starts with a minimum level of state aid for every student. So kind of level the playing field for everybody. But then he recognizes, second, that poverty is a real issue and that when you have a school where your poverty, there's some special services and support things that need to be in place for students that are on free and reduced lunch. So he believes that one of the factors in figuring out the state funding formula is what is the level of poverty in your school district, and you should get additional income or additional funding to help with that. And then third, he understands that he's heard from property owners that too much of the burden of our schools is on the property owners and as taxpayers. And so he's looking at finding additional state aid, but to do that in a way that would lessen the impact upon property owners. Third, he's really concerned about rural school districts. They're very small school districts that really they've been down to the bone on this issue for some time now, and we've heard about some of the up north, some of those school districts looking at for, you know, having to close. Mm-hmm. At the same time, they're so separated geographically that consolidation, which certainly would be a tactic because of the distance between some of these schools, you'd have kids riding buses for so long and parents traveling 50 miles to see a football game or whatever, or participate in their school program, that consolidation really isn't an option for some of them. And then the last thing he looks at in his plan, which is would really be helpful to us, we're planning our budgets a year in advance, all right? And yet we really don't know what our state aid's going to be until the fall when budgets have already been approved. So he's talking about let's provide predictable growth. You know, let's be able to tell our school districts sooner what they can expect in state aid so that they can plan around that rather than the way it works right now is schools plan their budgets based on history and what it's been. And then the potential in this kind of economy to find out later in the game that you're not going to get the state aid that you thought you were going to get. Now what are you going to do? So predictable growth would be a wonderful factor for us to have in our hands when we're doing our planning year in advance.
In Minnesota, Jerry mentioned rural districts. And in Minnesota, one of the more significant challenges we face as a rural outstate district is that inequity in funding. Across the state, there's a pretty significant gap between the highest percentiles in the district in terms of their revenue coming in per student and the lowest percentiles. So a reformed funding system that would address those inequities. I mentioned earlier about the voter-approved operating levies, the need to reduce the dependence on those voter-approved operating levies is significant. Until then, how the burden is bared, so to speak, for those levies, there's inequities as well. A tax-rich district, there's a larger tax base to spread the cost of those operating levies across. Our district is not one of those districts. So a funding formula that equalizes that tax burden across the state to work to provide a more equitable education for students throughout the state of Minnesota is a very significant need and a concern that will need to be addressed in the months and years ahead.
I think everyone would agree that no matter where you live in Minnesota, no matter where you live in Wisconsin, you should be able to get a good quality education, and it shouldn't be relying on whether you live in a tax-rich area or not.
What's the likelihood of that educational reform happening, though?
Well, as our state superintendent, in his words, he says that he recognizes that there's been a graveyard of proposals in the past. A lot of commissions have been formed, blue ribbon studies and so on and so forth to try to deal with this. So he understands that. He also understands the politics, that typically when an idea comes forward, there's winners and losers. And so the winners are for it and the losers are against it. And we end up with a logjam, if you will, of ideas, and we're not able to move forward. So he recognizes that. That is a huge challenge. There are other ideas out there. I know Wisconsin Way, a number of commissions and others have come up with some ideas. I'm just hoping that the local citizens are letting their legislators know that we cannot sidestep this issue any longer, that hopefully that they raise this whole idea on their agenda, that there needs to be a solution. Yes, it's a difficult one, but we need to take it on. The time has come, and we can't wait anymore.
And really, I think we need to look at the bigger picture, and as difficult as it may seem in the challenging times that we face, policy needs to rise above politics. And what is the right thing to do? And it may take a while to get there. It may not happen as quickly as we would like, but to set the course. I think now more than ever, we need to keep an eye to the future. And it's going to be a challenge, but we need to come together, form the collaborative networks, partnering with our political leaders to get the job done.
I think everyone understands that the future for our economy is not as much manufacturing anymore as it is a knowledge base, and that improving our schools is going to improve the workforce and promote the kinds of industry that really is the future of this country, the idea making, the generation of innovation, all those things are originality and innovation and being progressive in those ways, that this country perhaps isn't going to be the leader. It's always been the leader when it comes to the Nobel Prize and other, big ideas, but it's not going to be the leader necessarily in manufacturing. We have to move on, and every child does need actually more education than pre-K 12 can afford or do, and that we want to create a college-going culture, understanding that not every child will necessarily go to college, but every one of our kids are going to need the skills, whether they go into a career right away or in the military or into college, they're going to need the same skills.
We ask families to take a look at their budgets and to live within budgets. And they're challenged by that just as much as school districts are. And when you look at the overall costs within your school district, you've got transportation costs and facility costs and instructional costs and that. But when
food service
yeah. as well, you put it all yeah. together, what does it cost to educate a student for 1 year in your school system?
It really varies. Mm-hmm. It varies with a student. It could be anywhere from $9,000 to, there are special education children who need a person by their side that are in life support systems as they attend school. Mm-hmm. So, those can rise as high as $35,000, $40,000. I think that another thing that the state funding formula needs to look at is maintaining equity, that a school district who has more of those needs is going to need more funding. Now, the federal government does help us a little bit in that regard, but quite honestly, it's never helped us to the degree that the government said it would. So to say what it costs to educate a child varies from child to child, depending on the kind of services and support that they need.
There are a lot of code words and phrases out there in terms of education these days. Things like pay for performance, mm-hmm. teaching to the test, mm-hmm. no child left behind, race to the top, and all of those seem to suggest a dissatisfaction with education or a need for greater accountability and outcomes and where and how the money's being spent. Is the situation with regards to all of those kinds of phrases and terminologies that's out there, is the situation in your schools as bad or as challenging as the rhetoric with those seem to imply?
I think people have to remember that we're graduating more kids than any other time in history, that it wasn't that long ago that requirement for students to stay in school was raised from 16-year-olds to 18-year-olds. Which had an impact on all the things that you mentioned. We're graduating more kids than any time in history. We have more kids going to college than any time in history. We have more kids taking the ACT and the SAT and achieving better on those scores. When you have more kids taking those tests, the first dip is going to be the fact that you've got more kids taking the test. I mean, 50 years ago, the only kids that took those tests were kids that were going to Ivy League schools. That's no longer the case. Every college now demands those tests. And so I think we have to remember that at the same time, over the course of the last 50 years, we've expanded the range of who's going to college, what the expectations are. I shared with somebody the other day, we're already sometimes labeling a child in first grade that they're a struggling reader. I got to tell you that I didn't even start reading instruction until first grade. We start that in kindergarten now. In fact, some of our preschool programs are, you know, doing the alphabet and looking at words and letters. So I'm not sure everyone has recognized how we've accelerated learning and how much we have raised the expectation for students. So I'm not going to make excuses, but I got to tell you, in many ways, I don't think our public schools have ever been better than they are today in terms of results. And so I would argue that while we certainly have our challenges and we can always do better, I don't think there's a point in time when public education has served more people at a greater degree than they have today.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about accountability, this certainly is an age of accountability, and again, not shying away from that. But I don't think we spend enough time looking back to see what we have accomplished. In our school district, we have a foundation that's recognizing alumni from the La Crescent Hoka schools. And as we look back and as people are nominated for recognition for that, we're looking at their accomplishments over the course of their lives. And our graduates have gone on to greatness, and we need to celebrate those stories and really develop a stronger sense of this is what our investment in education in our community is returning for us. These are the returns we're recognizing. At the same time, again, what forms of accountability? The standard one-size-fits-all test, you know, that's a topic of a completely different conversation. But what we're about in our district is trying to be more accountable to teach to understanding. Are the students leaving our schools, are they understanding the skills and the aptitudes and the things that they need to be successful in life? Do they know and are they able to do these things? What does it look like? Hands-on types of learning experiences that they can actually go out and apply the lessons that they're learning in their classrooms. All forms of accountability taking place in our district, looking ahead, pulling together the best possible learning experiences for our students.
Ron Wilkie, the superintendent of La Crescent Hoka Public Schools, and La Crosse School Superintendent Jerry Kember, discussing what the challenging financial times may mean for public education. They spoke with producer Mary Meehan Stroop, director of UW Extension for La Crosse County. Coming up in the next half hour, the future of higher education in Wisconsin. UW System President Kevin Riley, Board of Regents President Charles Pruitt, and UW La Crosse Chancellor Joe Gout talk about higher education and its future challenges. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page. That's wpr.org/lacrosse.